SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. Midweek and the start of the very much the sprint to the wire here in upstate New York. And also at Del Mar. Last night at the Brig, they drew the Pacific Classic, and I don't know why there's a group, a percentage of the supposed race fan public that can't ever be satisfied with any field that comes together. I don't know. I look at this group, and you've got Accelerate, who arguably is the division leader among the handicap division. So nice to have that. Multiple grade one winner this year. Races like, the Gold Cup and the Big Cap. You've got a handful of other stake winners, including Pavel, who won the Foster. So two grade winners, grade one winners. Then you've got a handful of other stake winners, graded stakes. Prime Attraction, he's a graded stake winner. And multiple graded stake placed beyond that. You've got the Lieutenant, the brother of Justify, who has emerged finally at age five. Drew the rail, too. Should get a very cozy trip. Saving Ground inside, and his misfortune in the Suburban to run into Diversify, and of course won the All-American, the grade three before that. And you've also got Dr. Door, Baffert making a last minute decision and swapping Dr. Door, Mooptahij, and Beachview I should throw in too, Leo Powell. Off the Cougar win, another graded stake winner. So I don't get it. I don't get it's the worst Pacific Class. I'm exhausted by the constant comparisons to some era that didn't really exist. We get it around here too. Oh, do you remember when? Oh, there every graded stake had 12 champions in it. No, it didn't. It didn't. And in a lot of cases, there were little four, five-horse fields in those stakes that you've got a sepia-toned vision of. Accelerate's going to be a clear, heavy favorite. Then you got Pavel, who gets a even more of an acid test here. Against a horse like Accelerate, he beat him in the Gold Cup, but maybe coming out of the Foster, is he better now? And then the Lieutenant, who I think I said yesterday, is a horse that feels like his best is now just coming to the fore at the age of five. So It's okay. It's the Pacific Classic, and I saw a question from somebody: how come some Eastern horses didn't? I don't know. What's the eagerness to ship across the country when there's a race 3 weeks from Saturday at Saratoga? Who's gonna come shipping across to Del Mar when you could run out of your own stall or a van ride away for the Woodward? Why are Eastern horses supposed to come and augment this field. That's an argument I don't get. I understand the different situation for the Del Mar Oaks and the chance for exclusive 3-year-old opportunity. That's a slightly different situation, but nothing wrong with this Pacific Classic, and looking forward to the rest of that card that'll come together today. And of course, here, Saratoga, Saturday card will be drawn, and we'll get our hands on the Alabama card. In addition to the Pac Classic, you've also got the Del Mar Oaks and the Grade 1, and you've also got the Del Mar Handicap, the Grade 2 for the 3 and ups going a mile and how far is that? That's a mile and a half? No, it's less than a mile and a half. Mile and 3/8. Mile and 3/8, the Del Mar Handicap, the Grade 2. So that card will be terrific. We've got the Alabama and we've got the Lake Placid. The 3-year-old fillies will come back. A lot of the Lake George runners coming back here a month later. Doesn't feel like a month. Feels like 10 minutes. The Del Mar Mile on Sunday as well. More of a quiet Sunday here. Ellis Park Sunday will run their juvenile stakes as well. They got the Monmouth Oaks down on the shore. So just a smattering of what's to come for the weekend. Meanwhile, still digesting a little bit from the weekend. Also looking back at a couple of things that happened over the last week. Pete Fornitzell will be with us after the first break. And we'll talk to Pete. The World Horse Players Tour show. It was so much fun. And I hope a lot of you had the opportunity to watch it online. And Pete will update us on the feedback. Tina and I, we had been at the on the backside in the back ring with two things going on last Wednesday at the Fasig Tipton Sales Grounds. Pete and Jonathan Kinchin and the team holding their party and their big unveiling of the show, which was really beautifully done. We'll talk about its elements and the reaction and where things are going. But we were in the back celebrating with Cherie DeVoe and David and Gordo. And I haven't had a chance to talk about that. It had a particular enjoyable discussion with John Sheriffs. And, of course, John and Dottie and Gordo, they came out, which was really nice. They came out, and David and Cherie didn't know if it was they were going to be able to get there, but they did. And it spent a good portion, at least an hour, John sat with us and really had fun. John talking about his background and his origins in the game, which I mentioned. I did mention this last week, but I didn't really expand on it. Going to have a next California swing where we're going to have Sheriff sit down and fascinating story. Really, really pretty cool. And he's talked about when he was working at the ranch and got to attend to Noor in the late stages of his stallion career and after. And, that we've heard. But how did he get to the ranch? That's what you want to hear. Came back from Vietnam. Did 2 years in Vietnam in some of the earlier stages, late 60 stages of the war. And then made his way west. He's a New Yorker by birth, Sheriffs. So, big Wednesday at the sales grounds. And Pete, he doesn't even know. I came in, Tina and I snuck into the pavilion, and we watched about 20 minutes of the show. And then I watched the rest of it online. It's really beautifully done. And there's, I think we all know there's something there. The question is it sellable? Is it sustainable as a entertainment vehicle for, you know, some sort of a network? And whether it's online or whether it's, you know, over, you know, the digital broadcast of some kind. So we'll see what Pete's got to say and where things have gone. I did see that he got a little bit of a boost from Nick Luck. Nick brought it to the attention of some UK purveyors. So the seeds are planted. And we'll hear from Pete. We'll also visit, of course, with Sid Fernando and get some of Sid's post-sales. You know, we talked immediately after the Select sale. Then there's the benefit of the New York action. We kind of wrapped a lot of that up with Boyd Browning yesterday. You may have heard this morning. I want to get Sid's take and a few other things. Sid wrote a pretty interesting column that I got to last night, the other day, or maybe like now, might have been two columns ago in the TDN with a international and historic perspective that if you haven't seen, I'll send out a link to it. So we'll have, of course, Sirewatch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale and Dick Powell. Dick will join us and we'll talk about the law conference. Touched on it yesterday with Matt Hegarty. You got a snapshot from each of the three business end functions last week. And Dick was part of the law conference, and he was a moderator. So we'll get some thoughts from him. Sports betting, just casting a long shadow over a lot of the discussions of these kind. We'll check in with Seth and probably do a little bit of handicapping. Right now, the knock on wood, we're holding our own when the weather is concerned. It does not look like there's any rain. It's an overcast morning and a lot of clouds. However, it should clear up by about 2 o'clock. So I think we're, boy, every time you say it, you doom yourself. But it does appear we're okay until Friday right now. There looks like some rain Friday. But I think today and tomorrow we're going to get the turf races in. They have not been watching the Naira feed, and they have, at this point, 9:15 coming up, they have not scuttled any turf works, so, or turf races. There will be turf works tomorrow, as it happens. And by the way, Horseman, if you're listening, the slips, the hall passes that you got for turf works, they're not going to be accepted for tomorrow. You got to go get new turf slips. All right? Monday's hall pass will not be accepted. This makes me laugh. We'll also get a couple of trainer visits in. We're owed a couple, so I'm going to surprise you. It'll be mystery date. I'm going to give Casey four names, and I won't even know. I'll say mystery trainer. Sign in, and we'll see who it is. There's a few candidates. There's some news too. I'll get to that after Pete probably. And I have to mention before I forget. I'm really glad yesterday I got that note about the latest Churchill Downs Racing Club runner that debuted yesterday at Indiana, and I mentioned it. Distant Shore, an Algorithms Timonium purchase, $50,000, bred by the McGinnises, who are as good as it gets in Maryland, out of a Touch Gold mare. I should ask John Parada, who's in Florida, by the way, may come in the studio tomorrow. I'll have to ask John if he was involved with Glimpse, the mare. But a winner upon debut and won well. Tom Amos, you could kind of count on. You knew Amos wasn't going to disappoint these people. And sharp works, steady five furlong works, and wins the 5.5 furlong debut. Distant Shore. So congratulations to everybody that got involved with the Churchill Downs Racing Club. And, of course, the big star will be back for the forego next week. But this has been a huge success. What Churchill did here has been, should be absolutely lauded. They're bringing lots of people into the game. It's been a big hit. Back after this, Pete Fornatel.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Join us at Presque Isle Downs for our two biggest days of racing. Sunday, September 16th, the $200,000 Presque Isle Mile. Monday, September 17th, the Grade II $400,000 Presque Isle Masters. North America's top filly and mare sprinters compete in the Premier Breeders' Cup Prep Race. Free Presque Isle Masters hats for the first 1,000 fans. Free T-shirts each night for the first 500 fans. September 16th and 17th, Presque Isle Downs, Erie, Pennsylvania. For more, go to PresqueIsleDowns.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here we go down a long dark road, same place where we used to go, and the words get stuck on the tip of my tongue, feeling cut off from everyone. Oh, do I have to talk you in your head? Do we have to make sense?
places. 20 minutes into this Wednesday get-together, and Pete Fornatale joining us, and he's going to try to talk some people into picking up the wonderfully produced World Horse Players Tour show. Pete, haven't talked to you since the party and the big reveal, and just beautifully done and lauded by those in attendance. Everybody, a big crowd, everybody enjoyed it, and now it's in the hands of the green light teams.
Thank you for the kind words, Steve. It was a great night at Basic Tipton. Thanks so much to everybody who showed up. Plenty of At the Races listeners on hand. And indeed, a very, very warm response from people. What I loved is there were friends of friends who didn't really know much about racing who seemed to get something out of it, as well as some pretty serious industry heavy hitters. It meant the world to me that our buddy Nick Luck thought enough of the show to do a little Periscope action about it in its immediate aftermath, and that has sort of created a little bit of a ripple with friends in the UK and Ireland as well checking it out. So that was the idea to put the world in World Horse Players Tour. And as you say, we now have it in the hands of our entertainment lawyer out there in Hollywood. We're going to hopefully have a meeting a little bit later today to discuss what happens next. And in the main, that's going to be trying to find a broadcast home for it. Not a process I've been through before. I've sold many books, but no TV shows. But I've done some research on it, and I'm feeling confident we're going to be able to find the right home for it and hopefully be able to produce a host of new episodes in 2019 and beyond for the World Horse Players Tour.
Let's talk about some of the elements, because it had, I thought, a number of things that were notable. And it included, for instance, the way the explanations of bets and of race conditions and the circumstances, the various portions and the moving parts of contest play, and at the same time just raw handicapping and horseplay, the explanations were feathered in without being obvious. I mean, it tried to speak to, I think, all levels of accomplishment in terms of player interest and the depth of understanding of the game, and that was to its credit, as well as the blend of players that it turned out that the final table offered, the eight players, which really had a seemingly, Pete, natural set of styles and approaches to the game.
You got it exactly. We modeled the show very closely after poker broadcast, and I went back and watched the very first season of the World Poker Tour, and I was so impressed at how they had content to keep somebody involved who didn't know what a blind was or didn't know the ranking of hands, and they had strategy that somebody who was even an experienced tournament player might have been in danger of learning something in that first season of the World Poker Tour. We definitely wanted to emulate that. And it's a delicate balance, but I think especially as we go along, we'll be able to do more in that regard at both ends of the spectrum. I think we learned so much just doing one pilot. We're sure to just get better and be able to tailor that content even more to the audience. And as for the group of players we had, I mean, we couldn't have, if we cast the show, I don't think we could have done better. It would have been nice to have a female player, obviously, at the final table. But with that exception, to be able to compare and contrast a guy like Frank McGowey, an old school professional horse player, looks at every horse in every race before he makes a bet, and a guy like Tony Joe, who's a computer-oriented player with an algorithm and an opportunity to let his machine help him in terms of not only the handicapping but also the betting decisions. And to just get to watch those guys interact and see them bond as horse players I feel like we just got very fortunate to have the good friends, Nick Tamara, who At the Races listeners know so well as our buddy Philly Joe, and be able to explore how lifelong friendships, even today, are made at the racetrack. That was a nice theme. There were just a lot of different threads to pull on. A 23-year-old kid like Justin Mustari, very much at the beginning of his tournament playing days, and to have him sitting next to a guy who he and the rest of us in the tournament world have watched win six figures six different times, the great Garrett Skiba, probably the most successful live bank player of all time. To have all these people sitting there and to have them have gotten there by happenstance, it was really fun to watch it all play out. And I'll say, while we certainly got lucky with such a strong group, generally speaking with horse players, particularly in live bankroll contests, I think we're going to consistently have all different kinds of characters and get to show the world what's so interesting about handicapping and betting. And obviously the idea is to engage that wider audience, particularly people who are already interested in one type of gambling or another, whether it's financial markets or sports betting or poker. And, oh, by the way, here's this opportunity within horse racing that's actually pretty darn close to a positive expectation the way that the finances of the tournament are going to be set up. I think we can bring a lot of new people into the game, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens next.
I stick with the makeup, too, because one of the things that I was struck with right early on was the introduction of the players, and you had, you know, the real cornucopia of age group and backgrounds, and that included, you know, from 20 to 60, basically,
yep.
including
yep.
At least three players in their 30s, and it very much mirrors the distribution and the learning curve and the lifestyle curve, the expendable income curve, everything that we try to discuss when it comes to getting people into the sport, and you know what is an unusual arc, and that is that people may get intrigued as a young, as a child or as a teen or in their 20s, then get immersed in their 30s, and then, you know, with leisure time and expendable income, mid-30s up beyond, they become serious about the game. And you know, this whole discussion about getting eyes on the racetrack, in fact, it was part of the roundtable, came up yesterday with Matt Hegarty and reviewing, you know, Sunday's presentations. This, to me, is remarkable in its the imagery and more or less, you know, capturing exactly what is happening and how it happens in the game.
I swear we did not have a mole in the McKinsey committee, Steve, but it almost felt that way reading some of the recommendations about the way to gain exposure for the sport. We were obviously very tickled to see I mean, maybe I'm reading into it, but in some of those recommendations describing a plan that I believe we're very much in the direction of, in terms of just trying to show the world what we're all about. And I think we had some terrific representatives, not just at the final table, but people, players traveling from around the country to support that first event, and really enthusiastic about the TV component of it. I have to imagine, if we were to have another event in short order, we'd have that much more interest just for people having watched the TV pilot. By the way, for those that missed it, it's still on YouTube in the link that we were sending around last week, but now maybe even easier to find for some listeners. It is the top item at this very moment on drf.com/YouTube. You can watch that pilot episode and see it. And I see this as just a snowball that's going to continue to roll downhill and gain momentum and get bigger all the time. And hopefully just fuel participation in the events, and we'll get this network deal in place, God willing, and the creek don't rise, and be able to just expose it to more people and just fuel the process and bring people in, not just for contests, but for to engage them and get them hopefully betting on a day-to-day basis. I mean, that is definitely one of the key ideas behind the World Horse Players Tour.
One other portion of this, too, that people will enjoy, and for those that haven't tried contests because you think or you thought that your unique approach wouldn't necessarily translate into contest play, one of the things that's very encouraging is how different each of the players in their presentation of their approach. You basically sense, Pete, that virtually every handicapping style was represented, including physical presence. You pointed that out and stressed that. Tony Joe with his computer modeling and his financial world expertise. Every virtual concept, speed capping and pace capping, I mean, it's virtually a collection of everybody that all of us enjoy the game the way we do and approach it the way we do, and it makes it very inviting from that perspective.
There's so many different ways to find a winner. We've been over some of the approaches. Then you've got we have a player there using a proprietary database, his own PPs essentially, to help navigate the contest landscape. We've got a guy in Justin Mustari, the kid who was taught to read the sheets by his dad, and very much going along those lines. Somebody like Nick, I see as a very clear in the line of succession of a great player, and the approach of somebody like Andy Beyer, the fundamental speed figures at the center, but pulling so many other elements into it as well. Very cool to be able to show how, no matter what your process is, you can have success in the game. And I think that's going to be one of the fun, it'll be a very fun thing to explore. I mean, who knows? Politics could play a role at some point in terms of what data we can show and what we can't. But especially in its infancy, this gives us an opportunity to just present a bunch of different ways of looking at the races and players trying to find winners.
Well, looking forward to hearing where it goes, but anybody that was interested and didn't get a chance, if you were around Saratoga, got kind of lost in the shuffle with everything that was going on last week. It was a pretty intense week with the sales and the wedding party and everything else. But well done, Pete, and best of luck with this. And you can tell by the finished product how much effort went into it.
Well, thank you, Steve. It's coming from you, it means so much with your knowledge of broadcasting and storytelling. I'm really gratified that you dug it to that degree, and very grateful for the opportunity to talk about it on here. Again, for folks who missed it, you can check it out. Easiest way is probably just drf.com/YouTube. You can also follow @HorsePlayerTour on Twitter for more information, some fun little tidbits, little pullouts from the show on there, and that'll be a place where folks can keep track of all the news and information as we go forward on this exciting journey, this vision that Jonathan Kitchen and I had basically almost 2 years ago now. It's been really fun. The hardest work in some ways is yet to come, but so far we've met every challenge head on. We'll continue to do so, and in my job with Daily Racing Form, I feel so fortunate, and you get to do a lot of this too, Steve, especially at our NHC broadcast, but really whenever you can throughout the year, getting to tell the stories of and champion horse players and just sort of cement their standing in this economic system that is horse racing. It's such a fun part of the business to be on, and I think there's a lot more we can do, and I look forward to continuing to do so in the near future and beyond.
Well, speaking of some results and some headlines and the contest scene, the Saratoga contest Friday and Saturday did not disappoint, and it had virtually everything you look for. I knew we'd have this conversation, so all I really did on Monday was mention that Joe Pettit had won on Saturday, and Roger Satina had made a bold bid, had a nice board hit, and of course Paul Sherman. You can't go more than a fortnight without Paul Sherman's name.
Apparently not more than a week.
He's everywhere. It's unbelievable.
I guess I called him tournament legend Paul Sherman on the show last week. One of his friends relayed that to him somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but disgusted tongue-in-cheek. And Paul said something to the effect of, yeah, I was feeling really proud of my accomplishments being called the tournament legend. The next day my wife told me, hey, legend, you forgot to take out the garbage. That's Paul's humility in this game in a nutshell. And right after he wins the first half of the NHC Tour, for him to get as big of an accomplishment as that was, and as much as that put him in position to make a run at becoming the first ever two-time NHC Tour winner, winning this contest outright with the number of entries that was in it, I dare to say he is a pretty short-priced favorite at this point. Still, a lot could happen, but a short-priced favorite to get that honor. And I asked him what that would mean to him if he could become the first person to ever win the NHC Tour twice. And he brought up Johnny Vandermeer. For the listeners who might not know, holds the record of consecutive no-hitters, only pitcher in baseball history to throw two no-hitters in a row. And Paul said he feels like it might be that type of situation where somebody could tie it, sure, but very unlikely that anybody's going to ever beat it. So he's hoping to, I think you'll be seeing that name in all kinds of leaderboards as he tries to salt away and secure that amazing honor. And then the winner on Saturday, Joe Pettit, absolutely one of my favorite tournament players. I met him when he finished second in the old format Saratoga contest back in 2015. He subsequently went on a huge tear online, and I wrote about him a bunch of times back then, and we've become friendly. In fact, when he heard about the TV show, Joe is the owner of the Key West Hat Company, and he actually sent me two really cool hat options to wear for the show. They didn't end up arriving in time, but you know, that's the kind of guy he is, just very, very kind guy, goes out of his way, understands what's fun about the racetrack, and I'm writing the story now about how he got the job done. Not a guy who traditionally loves live bankroll contests, always sort of had a little trepidation about the type of aggressive bets you need to make at the end, but found himself in favorable circumstances to do just that, cold cock the race, $1,300 exacta in that short field finale off the turf on Saturday, ends up getting the job done and winning a major tournament. Kudos to Joe Pettit, the handicapping haberdasher. I was happy to see him in the winner's circle, as well as a who's who of tournament players earning their seats to the NHC and the Belmont Betting Challenge as well. The Saratoga contests are back in a big way. Dom Lebetti at Naira, I know, deserves a lot of credit. I think he fought hard to try to get these moves to the weekend, and I haven't seen handle numbers or anything from the contest, but I have to figure it was very good for business as well.
Well, and given that we had some off-the-turf problems on Saturday, it really didn't seem to impact the way the play turned out. I was in contact with Roger Satina, and it looked like Roger was poised, and he ended up settling for, I think, what, third?
And third.
Yeah, now he's going to turn his attention. One thing I have not had a chance to do, Roger, next week, he and Chuck Simon send Deputy Czar to the Smarty Jones to prep for the Pennsylvania Derby. And deputies are late developing 3-year-old, got a mid-90s fig, Gulfstream performance, going back 3-4 weeks. So there you go.
It looks like a good year to have a late-developing 3-year-old, and I always root for Chuck and Roger. So it just makes the story that much better. It may be something because of Roger's involvement. Of course, twice second at the NHC, amazing accomplishment in and of itself, and just someone who seems to always be in position and has had a lot of high up finishes, super sharp, friendly player, and somebody who who's always fun to root for. Be fun to root for him in a non-tournament context this time around.
Well, Pete, beyond the Saratoga experience, looking forward, what else we got?
We've got a bunch of stuff happening on DRF tournaments. Attention has turned to the Keeneland contest, which is happening in October. That's the fall challenge is a very popular event. You'll see players coming in from all over the country there. There's also going to be more action in terms of the World Championship of Handicapping, which I'm finally expecting some big news about. Hopefully, I was told by the end of the summer, we'll be having some information about that. Also looking ahead, there is qualifying action. It's going to be a big qualifier on Traverse Day for the Pegasus World Cup Betting Championship. You can win your way into that with an event this weekend for $220, 1 in 5 going forward to the big Traverse Day event online. And then coming up for the Jersey contingent of players, I know several of whom live listen to the show and divide time between downstate and upstate, but Monmouth having their super qualifier $500 live bankroll event on Traverse Day at Monmouth, and you can win into that as well on DRF tournaments. If you go to tournaments.drf.com, you can check out the full list of everything happening, and I look forward to writing about some winners next week. This week it's been all follow-up from Saratoga, and I may get a Carson Matisse article in. He had a good tournament story for me as well. But next week, we'll get back to the business of profiling qualifiers on the DRF Tournament website.
Excellent. Well, Pete, as always, so much fun and see all the players come to town. There was just everybody that enjoys the atmosphere, not just Saratoga, but the camaraderie of the contests, and then your presentation that further enhanced it. It was great. Jonathan was here with the little guy, and really a nice week. It had you know, its own special, I thought, portion, and you made it that much more special with the WHT production. It's going to go somewhere.
Thank you, my friend. It was great to be a part of that exciting week between the sales and the show and the contest, and it's always one of the most fun weeks at Saratoga, and really I'll have fond memories of it for a long time, and continue to look forward to people's feedback from the show. You know, feel free to hit me up with any thoughts about it. You can find me on Twitter at LoomsBoldly, or you can hit me up at my podcast email, podcast@drf.com. Eager to hear people's thoughts on the World Horse Players Tour.
Pete Fornatel, everybody. LoomsBoldly. I'll send out the link so you can watch the show, and you'll really, really enjoy it. Not to mention the fashion tips that you get from Nick Tamaro. Wait a minute. Pete, thanks. See you later.
Cheers, my friend. Bye-bye.
Pete Fornatel. LoomsBoldly on Twitter. Back after this, we've got, well, now we got two horsemen to choose from. I think Shug's going to join us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio. We'll be right back.
thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Sermon Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade One race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
We're back at the races and about, 10, 12 minutes to the top of the hour, and happy to get a visit with Shug McGahey after a wonderful week. And whether it goes back to the Hall of Fame ceremony, whether we talk about the performances over the weekend and what really has been a strong portion, middle portion of the meet. Shug, congratulations on Inspector Lindley and Heavenly Prize and all the other good things going on.
Thank you, Steve. Yeah, we had a pretty good week, so I was pleased with that. And I was pleased with the way the horses ran over the weekend, and we're kind of starting the second half now, and hopefully we can finish it up on a good note going back to Belmont.
Well, there's some horses, too, that were kind of maybe hidden gems. We'll talk about a couple. I reached you when Heavenly Prize got got inducted or at least announced. Talk about the ceremony and what it's like. You've had a lot of moments in the pavilion to see the horses honored, as well as the people that you've worked with for years. You see them honored as well.
Well, I was pretty excited about Heavenly Prize, and it was kind of interesting because really all the other times, you know, I've been able to sort of keep myself intact. But I was a bit emotional that day. I mean, for some reason, I don't know whether it was, you know, because Denny wasn't there. And Mr. Phipps, of course, but he'd been gone a while. And Heavenly Prize was, you know, she was pretty special to me because she was first crop of Seeking the Gold, and then bam, here she comes. She loved it up here. You know, she won the Alabama and the two other older filly grade one stakes when she was four. But I was excited about it, and, you know, I was excited to have the opportunity to talk about her and talk a little bit about the game and talk a little bit about the Phippses, and that was all I was doing was accepting on their behalf. But it was exciting for me, and as it was for them, and you know, another one to go in, and you know, hopefully somewhere along the line we'll have another one that can be honored as well.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know, there were other, what was interesting about the ceremony, she was the solo spotlight in terms of contemporary, but the Pillars of the Turf portion, so many people, Shug, that you've had either direct connection to or tangential connections.
Were you talking about how old I am?
No, I politely, yes.
I thought it was very interesting. Obviously, you know, I was around a little bit when John Galbraith was there and watched Darby Dan. And of course, I've always had a relationship with Veach when he was there as their trainer. And, you know, some, of course, you know, everybody sort of knew and had watched Mrs. Tweedy for a while, not only during Secretary, but afterwards too. And, you know, I never heard of Lucky Baldwin. And to kind of learn about where he came from and how in the world they found those two great, great, great granddaughters a mystery to me, but they did. And so I really thought it was, you know, and then hear about, you know, old Mr. Hancock, you know, which we've had, you know, a long-standing relationship with Claiborne Farm, and it's just to hear a little bit more about the history of it and hear Arthur talking about, you know, I'd always heard that, you know, if a stallion stamped their foals, usually they might be the mark of a good stallion, and if they didn't, then maybe they weren't. So it was sort of interesting hearing Arthur talk about that. And so I thought it was very, very interesting myself.
Well, and of course, the Headley family represented, and yeah, their importance to Keeneland and
yes,
breeding and sales, and the Whitneys. You certainly rubbed elbows with Sonny, right?
Yeah, so, you know, I knew Mrs. Whitney, you know, probably better than him, but I knew him to speak to, and that would have been about it. But I went to school with a couple of her sons when we were in high school. We were in the same grade. She had twin sons. Their last name was Osford. And every time I ever see her, she always brings that up, and brought it up the other day. When I just walked in, she was sitting there, and she grabbed me by the arm, and she's always been very, very friendly and cordial to me. But she'll always bring up, well, I'll tell my sons, you know, I saw you. And so it's always fun.
Well, in addition, of course, to what goes on socially, and I did tell everybody, by the way, last week, you on the dance floor, I mean, that is something to watch.
I don't know about that, but I do enjoy every now and then. Allison has to drag me up there sometimes. Once I get there, it's fun. I've been a stick in the mud too many times, so every now and then I try not to be.
No, it was a lot of fun celebrating, yeah, Charlotte Weber and 50 years
nice
of Live Oak. Absolutely. Yep. Well, on to the racetrack. And, boy, for a horse that wasn't necessarily going to be the morning line favorite, everybody was aboard for Inspector Lindley, and he did not disappoint.
You know, he ran good. You know, we were hoping he would break good, but he was a little bit angsty in the gate, so he didn't break good. But I thought Jose did a really good job, Lascano, of being patient with him. He looked like he had a lot of horse going down the backside. And, you know, really all four of his races now have been very good races. You know, the three got beat in, he could have easily have won, just as a grass racing is. Sometimes circumstances get you beat. But, you know, we were pleased to see him. He trained very well up here, and we were pleased to see him come back and run that type of a race. And now we can sort of look down the line with him and go from there.
You know, you mentioned Lascano, who, you know, you ride occasionally, and he's had a terrific Saratoga very quietly. And not only was he positioning Inspector Lindley expertly, he also was tying up competitors the way he basically blocked anybody from trying to get out. I thought that was a brilliant trip.
I did too. And I agree with you. You know, I think especially Projected, he had him down on the inside of him, and he was riding him, and he did a very good job of sort of protecting his space and not let somebody shove him around. But I do agree with you. I thought he rode a really, really good race that day, not only being protective, but sort of protecting what he had.
Well, you've had a very nice, as I mentioned, portion of the meet, and even some of the horses, Jug, that have not won have been sneaky good. And the first one I want you to opine is Dance Card, that ran a sneaky good debut race.
Well, I thought she did too. You know, I mean, she got shut off leaving the gate, and then, you know, again, Jose Ortiz did a great job of being patient with her and letting her get her feet off the ground. I told him I didn't want him to be, you know, sort of riding her hard away from there, and he did, and she finished up good. You know, disappointed, obviously, she didn't win, but I thought that her experience is sure going to help her as we go down the line.
Will you run her back before the end of the meet, or will you wait till we get back downstate?
Well, I mean, she seemed to come out of her race very well, Steve, and if she continues on that track, you know, there is a race here late going 7/8, so it'll probably fit her pretty good.
Well,
so I would like to be able to run her back up here.
Well, you at 7/8, that's a that's the magic. Yeah,
when 7/8.
What about Browse's nice win the other day? I thought that was a nice step forward.
Well, I've been sort of wanting to get her back on the dirt, and through circumstances the other day, we got her back on the dirt when they took the race off the turf. And, you know, my son had her around Keeneland, and she had really, before we shipped her, she'd worked really well. And he told me, he said, that was the best work he'd ever seen her have. And she got up here and she did fine. And, you know, it kind of, she had the one post, and I thought that probably Team of Teams and maybe George's filly and JC Shooting Star with Malibu Stacy, I think, would be the speed. And I told Jose, I said, you know, just I think she'll break running because she's fresh. But I said, I think there's some speed in there. Maybe we'll drop right in behind them. And then she did break running, and he said nobody else wanted it. And then we got to the half-mile pole. I said, protect it from there, just for myself. And, you know, I thought she did run good, you know. I mean, they came to her a little bit to have the stretch, but he had horse, and she sort of drew off at the end. So I was pleased with that. And, you know, just got to try to figure out what to do with her. She stakes place. I sure like to win a stake with her. You know, she could repeat that down the line somewhere. Maybe that would happen. But I think she'll be a really, you know, with her pedigree, and she's got some racing ability, you know, and she is stakes place too. She was second to a good filly of Arnold Delacour, who came back off that race and won the Delaware Oaks last summer. And, you know, I think that, you know, when you see horses win in New York and, you know, especially come up here and win, that, you know, it means quite a bit. And to me, it might mean more than winning a stake, you know, a little stake in Indiana Grand or somewhere, because, you know, as you know, you better have your running shoes when you come up here.
That's for sure. And you bring up the allowance and stake nuance and getting the horses, the black type, which of course is so important to the owners that you work with. And, you know, I could bring up a horse, Dr. Mounty, you know, you sent him down to the ocean port and got a huge effort in there, the black type. And then there's a horse like Danceland. Shug, talk about the allowance landscape. And if you think how much it's changed, we hear constantly that, you know, there's no room anymore that we can't write races for allowance horses, that it's, you know, you break a maiden and then there's stakes. What's your view of this?
Well, of course, I was brought up to, you know, try to use your conditions and let them learn. And I'll use her for an example. Is she came back, you know, we gave her the winter off. She came back and she had a troubled trip, and then she won it. Then she won a nice race at Belmont. You know, and then Joe Allen owns her, and he said, what about running her in the River Memories? And so I said, well, let's nominate her, and we'll see what's in there. And I called him. I told him, I said, listen, Joe, which Joe's a good listener. And I said, these are professional route horses. Fillies that are going to be in there, and I don't think it's the right thing to do at the right now, especially off one race and going a mile and a half against horses that naturally will run that far. And but now, so we got the allowance race to go here, and I thought she ran a really good race. And, you know, now I think it's time to step it up, not only from experience wise, but from confidence wise, and see if we can get something done on that caliber too. And I think she can, you know, whether it's in New York or not, I don't know, but she'll get an opportunity. But I think somewhere along the line, you know, if everything goes right, she ought to have a chance to win a stake.
The condition book, and you do seek out these kinds of spots, the non-winners of two, and when the threes are offered. And so many times you and I have talked about allowing horses to reach maturity to get to five, and you've got, you know, plenty of leeway when it comes to, you know, you bring up Joe Allen, and we can talk about Emery Hamilton and Stewart and the Phippses. You've obviously, you can say, let's be patient. We hear people, observers and horse players, though, complaining that there's only six horse fields for these allowances. I mean, what's your view of this discussion?
Well, I can agree what they're saying, but from my standpoint is, you know, give us a chance to run. You know, don't just because it's got five or six horses in it, you know, say, okay, well, we're not gonna use the race, and then that horse is sitting back here here in the barn. I mean, I've got a New York bred here, wants to run long on the turf. I mean, you know, he broke his maiden going a mile and a sixteenth on the turf back at Belmont, and I haven't had an opportunity to run him because the race doesn't go. Well, that's frustrating to me, and, you know, it's frustrating to the people that own him. But you know, and I'm sure that if they got six in the race, and Martin would probably let the race go, you know, if it looked like that there was, you know, no rain in the forecast or something. But, you know, I just feel like that, you know, give us a chance to run, and, you know, then probably you can use us a little bit, down the line, maybe in the state company, if, you know, if the trainer or whoever feels like that they're up to that situation. But just to have to throw them to the lines right off the bat, sometimes it's a little bit difficult to make.
Well, you're going to have some decisions to make with some of the maiden winners. We mentioned the War Cabinet, we should talk about from the beginning of the meet. When does War Cabinet come back?
Well, there's a race going long later on in the new book, and I'll try to use that there. If not, you know, maybe I could send her to Kentucky Downs. There's a something going a mile and 5/16 or something down there. But hopefully I'll be able to run her in the AO down here later on the meet and sort of see where she runs. If she run, were to happen to run good, maybe I'd run, bang her back in the Sands Point or something of that caliber. Or, there'd be spots to run her in along. But we're, I think probably what, we would really be hoping for is, when we get maybe next year, some of these longer filly and mare races, that she'll be that kind of horse for us at that time. A filly that kind of like War Flag that, ran the Sheep's Head Bay in the New York, and she won the River Memories, and then she came here and ran in the Way. I think she was second or third in the Glens Falls, and she won the Flyer Bowl. And use those type of races. That's what I think down the line is what we'd like to be able to do.
Well, speaking of those kinds of races and those kinds of horses, it sure feels today, is this the coming out party for Shereda?
I hope so. I mean, she's very talented filly. We ran her a couple times on the dirt because she had trained so well on the dirt. But she's a typical kind of a filly that trains good in the bridle on the dirt. But when we ran her, when you got to the quarter pole and started asking her, she was just sort of even from there. And you see that a lot in horses that want to run on the grass, but you're running them on the dirt. And, so I'm really interested to run her today. There's a few concerns, and one's going a mile and 16th here, whether she's going to be quick enough to, go around these turns and be able to finish up. I would have no problem at Belmont around that big turn, but, I'm hoping this is going to be the coming out party for her, and she's going to be that kind of filly. She gives all indications that she is.
I want you to bring everybody back for a horse that doesn't get nearly the attention that she should. And this family has got to be one of your favorites. And we're talking all the way back to Queena. And she went on a tear, Shug, in 91. The Vagrancy, the Ballerina, the Mascot, the Ruffian, three grade ones in a row, plus the grade three, and then in the Breeders' Cup Distaff, which might have been one of the roughest fields assembled. Talk about the fall of 91.
Well, like I say, she was pretty good. Sometimes it looked like a horse would pass her, and she was going to get beat, and she'd come back and win. I know she did it up here. And, in the Breeders' Cup, when we took her there, she was not bad in the gate, but she was one when she got in there. It took her a second to sort of get her feet underneath her. And Tommy Wagner, who was the starter at Churchill then, she drew the 14, and he was the starter there, and they didn't even close the back doors on them. As soon as that last horse went in, they were gone. And Mike Smith and I both talked to him about it and said, please, when you put her in there, give her a chance. Well, they put her in there, and she was sort of trying to get her feet underneath her, so she didn't break that well. So she reeled from the 14 and not breaking well, she really ran, a very good race. And I think that was one of those. Dan Smartley might have won that Breeders' Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm not
you
sure.
Were second.
Maybe Cynthia Spilt, yeah, Versailles Treaty was second.
Exactly.
So
yeah, absolutely.
It was a very solid race.
Well, and then she gave you Lorena.
Lorena was good. Two-year-old, she ran her into the Demoiselle. Shado came back in there from the Breeders' Cup, and I remember I said, waiting for Shado to come in the paddock at Aqueduct. I'm thinking, I said, I hope I'm going to see some skinny filly that the Breeders' Cup took a lot out of her. Well, when she came in the paddock, she... That wasn't the case. She looked great, and she ran great. And I think Bailey rode mine, blew a stick, and we just got beat. But, that is a strong family, and, like I say, I've got filly out of her down that's at Fair Hill right now called Special Event that was second in a stake at Monmouth to Dream a While. And then she came back and she sort of disappointed me in the Matchmaker and was third. But I think she's got some ability. And then, you know, you've got all of her family. I've got a nice filly here by Kitten's Joy out of Hungry Island that might make the end of this meet named Kitten. Hungry Kitten.
Hungry Kitten?
Not a hungry.
Cute.
Out of Hungry Island. Usually she wants to name these things where I can't pronounce them, but I can I can pronounce her name. And I really do like her.
Well, here's the good news about Chereda, which is it took Queena three tries to break her maiden. It took Lorena two tries. So she's in good company with her grand-dam and her great-grand-dam.
Well, I'm hoping it'll be third time be the charm for her. Emery's coming today, and that's something kind of out of the ordinary. She's in Maine in the summertime, so she's going to come down and watch her run. So I'm glad of that. And she'll see Hungry Kitten. She's here, and so hopefully we'll have a good result, and she'll go back to Maine with a smile on her face.
That'd be nice. Let me get a quick glance ahead to tomorrow and Pink Sands.
Well, you know, she ran twice last year. You know, I mean, two of her races last year out of four, she was looked like a winner and got beat. And, you know, but she's come back and she's been, I had her ready to run back earlier in the summer and something happened. I had to back off of her and, you know, but she's back ready to go. She seemed to be full of energy up here, and I sort of like what I've seen. She spilled out a bit, and you know, I'm looking forward to getting her started again. You know, we've still got some experiment we can do if 6.5 on the dirt's not it. You know, two turns or, you know, even the grass. I've never had her on the grass, but I'm hoping she'll be a dirt filly. And, you know, like I say, I'm looking forward to running her. Andrew's a good friend, and he's been a great, you know, small owner for me, and, you know, he never complains, and we haven't had a whole lot of luck, but it'd be nice too, but he hangs in there, and he says, I'm trying to do the best I can to get you some. He's got two Pioneer of the Nile, two-year-old fillies, and so, you know, I've he's one I would sure like to have a nice horse for him so we could have some fun because he deserves it.
Well, I did see one of the fashion, I think, right? Didn't one of his
down law fashion week.
There you go. I saw that. Fashion week. Yeah, so
she won down law, and I've trained her on the Tapita a little bit down there, and I think I'm going to take her up to Woodbine and run her up there on the 26th of this month, and see if she likes the peas. I'll leave her up there, and Catherine Day Phillips has got a horse of 2-4, and see what happens. We're going to take her up there and see what happens the first time, but that's his mare, and he's got 2, 3, 4 fillies out of her, so we need something good to happen for him.
Yeah, he's had, you know, that Thieskin's Theory. She's gotten some seemingly, you know, well-bred types. It'll come together.
Yeah.
And it's nice to hear that, you know, that he's patient. And this horse, this Pink Sands, that he actually has in partnership with Gainsway, with Anthony Beck, out of her smile, that was the Bobby Flay, the good Bobby Flay sprinter that Todd had. And so 6.5 sounds right.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think she's by Include, and, you know, Include, they wanted to run long, but her smile was a sprinter, and so we'll see how she does. If I tap it, they'll do anything. So, looking forward to running her tomorrow, and, you know, hopefully we'll have a good result. One way or the other, just as long as she goes over and runs a race whether it's winter or not, but something we can build on and be fine.
Exactly, exactly. Shug, meet's going great. It's always special when we get to talk to you about, you know, so many of the incredible horses that you've turned into champs and made into important broodmares, and the parade continues. Best of luck the rest of the meet. Thanks so much.
Okay, Steve. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Always one of our, I mean, just, you can't go wrong. You just, every horse you look at with Shug, and you, if you take a peek back and go behind the curtains, and how about, you know what, we're coming up now with a Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hillandale with Sid, and I've talked to Sid about doing a series about, you know, the horse that time forgot, and there are so many horses that, you know, obviously individual people have affection for, and if they were, whether they're not necessarily champions, but, you know, stake winners and such. Quina, it's really not all that long ago, right? It's 25 years ago, 30 years, a little less than 30. And Quina was spectacular. I remember that summer, and I, you know, that's the period, you know, the late 80s is when I really started to attend as often as I could, both here and Monmouth when I moved to Brielle and got to go to Monmouth on a regular basis. And Quina just, I not a name you hear brought up, and she had as strong of a campaign that year in 91 as you're going to find. And in fact, I should mention Saturday night, and speaking Hall of Fame, Julie Crone, the bust of Julie, the bronze, is being unveiled Saturday. It's a get-together at the museum, and I bring up Julie, too, because one of the races that I found myself looking at earlier as part of the Shug visit was that ballerina that Quina won, and she didn't go favored, as it happens. She was second or third choice, and the race is memorable. She beat Missy's Mirage and Chief and Julie. Mike Smith, getting Quina past Missy's Mirage, who had taken the lead off of Dream Touch, and Bailey, who had set the pace. And Lucas had sent out a pretty potent, rather potent entry, as it happens. Bright Candles and Dream Touch. Mig was on Bright Candles. This is kind of a fun Tipsy Girl in here with Herbie McCauley. And who else? Lucky Lady, Craig Perrett. For Phil Housewald. Saw Phil the other day. And a classic New York entrant, Robert Perez with She's a Shaker with the Choppy, brought up the rear at 60-1. But Paulina Ortiz, who we used to bet and cash. I don't think I ever cashed a Paulino Ortiz horse late in, you know, when his name was on the program, late at less than 20-1, right? That was one of my man Jim Ortiz. Jimmy, we used to cash Paulino at big numbers. So much fun to talk to Shug. It between the Hall of Fame ceremony and everything else, he makes me laugh too. Let's take a break. Sid's going to step in, and we're going to listen to his riffs on the sale and more. Dick Powell, Seth Merrow, and I'll do some handicapping. A couple of very tricky spots on this card today, and tricky for a couple of different reasons. In some cases, it's kind of a hodgepodge, including that first race where there's a six-pack of suspects. And then there's a couple of maiden races. There's the important fifth race that ends the pick five. Boy, oh boy.
state-bred two-year-old fillies going six, and it's a second division. The first division goes as the second race. So the pick four, the early pick four today, is bookended by a split of state-bred juvie growls. The second race is the much tougher. It seems like everything landed in the second. The other division, the fifth, it's a mystery. I don't know. You got very little to go on. Just work tab and pedigree and trainer and reputation. So, yeah, there's then the eighth, too, is, I thought, a tough claiming group. Now, the stake today, by the way, the two-year-old fillies, they're the order of the day. You've got Shang 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 coming back from Royal Ascot, as well as Chelsea Cloisters. There's Elsa, who looks okay. Mike Stidham invading. And then a couple of maiden-type winners. So good running of the Bolton Landing today as the feature. All right, quick break. Sid next.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get five full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for five of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfertello. Please visit us at PABred.com.